You are listening to the extended version of Sexy Marriage Radio, smrnation.com.
You've turned on Sexy Marriage Radio, where the best sex happens in the marriage bed. Here's your host, Dr. Corey Allen.
Welcome back to another episode of Sexy Marriage Radio, where we're having straightforward, honest conversations about married life and all that goes on within it.
Right.
That it's about sex, but it's about life, it's about desire, it's about love, it's about romance, and it's about how the times when those things get, the bubble gets burst, and you realize there's something going on different than I thought was going to happen. We want to cover it all here at Sexy Marriage Radio. And one of the ways we know where we're heading with each episode is from you, the Sexy Marriage Radio Nation. When you speak up, call in, email, and you can leave us a voicemail at 214-702-9565 is the way we love to hear your voice and add it to the show. You can also send us an email at feedback@sexymarriageradio.com. And everything that comes through into our inbox is read. Some of it is replied to offline. Some of it becomes episodes. Some of it becomes topics that will eventually be covered. But for the 8 years of Sexy Marriage Radio now, it has really been listener-driven. So Sexy Marriage Radio Nation plays a vital role in helping create what this is. And so joining me again, as always, is my wife, Pam.
Hey, good to be here.
And where we are heading today... we've got several emails that have been and messages that have just been in the queue.
Good.
That we need
good.
To get covered.
Glad to hear that.
But also, I need to say just a quick little housekeeping, if you will, and almost a pseudo celebration, if you will.
Yeah.
At least of letting everybody in the Sexy Marriage Radio Nation know that, you know, 2 weeks ago we celebrated 8 years. Mm-hmm. And that following weekend, so just a little bit over a week and a half ago, we topped 7 million total downloads.
Woohoo!
As a show.
That's great.
Which, that's an unbelievable thing that here we are doing this in our living room. And it spreads far and wide. And it's because of the listeners that it has become what it is today. So
that's
thank
right.
you so much to the Sexy Marriage Radio Nation.
A lot of sexy people out there.
Absolutely there are. And we are so glad that you spend time each and every week to spend it with us. Mm-hmm. We also ask, because of this, we want to help spread the word. So jump on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, however you choose to listen. Rate and review the show. Leave a comment. That helps spread the word that Sexy Marriage Radio is a valuable source for quality information. Mm-hmm. So coming up on today's regular free version of Sexy Marriage Radio, like I mentioned just a minute ago, several of your questions and our answers. And on the extended version of Sexy Marriage Radio, which is deeper, longer, and there's no ads, you can subscribe at smrnation.com. We're going to dive into the idea of when one spouse says to another regarding whatever their wants or desires are, yeah, I'm just not ever enough for you. It's just never enough. Mm. And so we posed this question to the Sexy Marriage Radio Academy on a live Q&A call that took place this week.
Right.
And got some input from them as well as our thoughts on the subject as well. And
yeah, so, there was some great conversation.
Great conversation. And it's a chance to hear how that whole thing unfolded is what the extended content will be. And on that note, if you're not a member of the Sexy Marriage Radio Academy, check it out. There's been a vibrant conversation going on the last couple of weeks based on the topics we've been covering. Mm-hmm. And on last week's show with Dr. Jennifer Finlayson-Fife. So you're missing out. If you want a little bit more in-depth, the Academy is the way you find that. And that's at smrnation.com/SMR Academy. So all that's coming up on today's show. So to start us off today, Pam, there's an email that came in regarding the show that we did with Jeff Abraham, who was the CEO of Promescent. It's episode 431, The Challenges of Intimacy.
Yeah.
And in that dialogue that we had with him, it spurred a comment from a listener that was takes an issue, I guess, is
sure.
with the way something was posed
okay.
and then how I reacted to it.
Okay.
And so the email goes, your guest Jeff Abraham made a comment about the line in the movie, You Complete Me, which is from Jerry Maguire.
Uh-huh.
I was surprised that you did not call him out on that. You may be a whole person when you're single, but when you get married, you're now a whole new person. God no longer sees two people, only one. From Genesis, then the two shall become one. You can no longer make independent decisions in God's eyes. Every decision after that is a couple's decision. Whether it's about money, time, or sex, it's a joint decision. You're no longer capable of making independent decisions. Every decision affects the other person in some way. You skim around this all the time. You reference high desire and low desire as independent values. There's really only one, and that is the desire level that we together agree upon. You say this all the time. If you're going to agree to have sex, then you need to be fully present. You need to be one in the act. If only one decides not to have their not to, then they're sinning against the body because there is no agreement. The flip side is that it's also of this is also a sin. One person does not get to decide that they can have sex anytime they ask. That's also a sin against the body. It's a mutual agreement that is fair to both. You also talk about boundaries, which Paul talks about in Romans. One person may view something as sinful or distasteful, and you should not force them to sin. It may not be a sin to you, and I believe that God designed each person with their own unique moral compass. Outside of the Ten Commandments, each person has to decide what is right for them and live by that, but not force or coerce someone to go against their nature. You should not cause another person to sin. Thank you for the show. So.
Yeah.
There's a big disagreement in this with what he's proposing and what was not addressed as far as he's seeing or hearing on the show.
Right.
With Jeff. That you complete me. I should have been upfront about it, I guess, is what he's asking. On why did I not call that to task? Because the two shall become one. So there's now independent, not two independent people.
So what's your
thought
on that?
There's just one. I wholeheartedly disagree with the whole concept of the two shall become one, meaning we no longer exist as individuals.
Right. There's no independent decisions. I can't have my own decision.
I cannot buy into that. I see it as the idea of the two shall become one, just to take the verse out of from Genesis. This is, to me, a spiritual concept where we are one in spirit, but not one in body, except for, and I think this is alluding toward the idea of the oneness that sex can create, because male-female sex is actually a connecting of the bodies. And also, it's talking about the idea of the two shall create one, as in children.
Okay.
I think that can be added into this equation. But I fully believe that, according to the way I see scriptures and the way I try to live my life and our life, Pam is a separate entity that is in charge of herself in and of itself, especially when it comes to her walk with God in Christ. If I stumble and she's still strong, I don't bring her down in God's eyes.
Right.
If I reject the faith and leave, I don't bring her down in God's eyes.
Right.
I change the spiritual dynamic of our relationship, absolutely. But I see that this concept of the two shall become one gets misused way too much in the Christian faith as leverage for we need to come to an agreement on this. We need to be in sync. We need to be in lockstep. We need to see eye to eye on that. And I just don't believe that happens on human level terms.
We talk about how many topics there are that there's just gridlock. You don't come to an agreement. And I mean, that's half of the episodes that people email about, saying, well, we're just at different levels. We can't come to an agreement.
Right.
You know, how do you reconcile that with this interpretation of becoming one? And you would get nowhere. You would make no decisions.
Right. And I'll agree in theory that his idea of that higher desire, lower desire are independent values, and there should really only be one that we agree upon. Absolutely. That's kind of a goal. But I don't think that makes it go away of that difference, that one of you is higher than the other.
Yeah.
One of you is lower than the other. And there will be conflict and tension that happens in between it. And then when he gets into the idea of sinning against the body, if you force someone to be involved in something, yes, you're in an area where you're wrong. But the pressure of wanting to do something with someone else makes it to where if you have two independent people, it becomes choice, which ultimately I think every human being wants to be chosen, wants to have free will. And whatever I'm doing in the sexual realm with someone, I want them to choose to do that with me, not just placate me or be obligatory.
Right, be forced to do it.
Right. And so you want someone that is freely choosing to be a part of it. And if I don't have a self, I can't freely choose. Mm-hmm. So there is this element of, I think we take scriptures and we try to make them work in areas where maybe they just don't work. They're not intended. And so we need to pull back at times to go more, okay, what's the context in which that's written? How do I keep it within that context and maybe extrapolate the ideas out of it or the principles out of it? But there's nothing in scripture that says, here's how you do marriage, other than there's one that Paul talks about. If you choose to get married, there will be trouble. But all the others are, it gives you principles. It doesn't tell you the how-tos.
Principles of submitting and respecting. And
right. But I think that's also principles of society. Of submitting and respecting when you're talking about rulers and authorities and bosses and parents and children. And, I mean, all across the hierarchy of the way this whole thing is set up, that everything is in submission to something. And ultimately, the goal is we each are in submission to God. And maybe that then challenges us to be better in how we treat and submit and respect others.
Hey, Corey and Pam, it's Nicole from SMR Academy. My question today is about sensate focus. My husband and I don't have much experience with it. We've tried and just kind of failed at it, and we've never actually seen a legit sex therapist. So if you could just provide more information on what exactly sensate focus is and how you do it, that'd be great. My husband and I, we've been married for almost 5 years. We were sexually active before marriage, and then my guilt got to me. And so for 3 of the 5 years that we dated, we didn't have any sex, no sexual touch. And I feel like that kind of no touch mentality followed us into our marriage. My husband is still dealing with just getting used to the idea that he can actually touch me and be sexual with me now. And we've been married 5 years. So we just want to get out of that rut really badly, and have sex be more spontaneous and fun and just kind of come more naturally. I'm thinking sensate focus may be able to help us. And if you could just provide more information on what exactly it is and how we can do that, that'd be great. Because the times we've tried, we haven't been able to fully get out of our heads and into our bodies. So love the show. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you for the call, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Sensate focus is something from the 1960s that was created by Masters and Johnson, who are some of the forerunners of sex therapy, that actually were willing to dive into the arena that was not being covered, studied, researched, experimented with, etc. And they were ones that kind of led that charge. And so sensate focus is a technique that a lot of sex therapists use to help couples address, in some regards, exactly what Nicole's asking. The one caveat I would add to be aware of, Nicole, is sensate focus does not necessarily help create spontaneity. Sensate focus largely is designed to help with addressing the anxiety surrounding sex and sexuality and touch. Because we all can have elements of anything that we might do when it comes to a sexual arena can reach us to a point where we're uncomfortable and the anxiety spikes. And that then leads to delayed ejaculation, premature ejaculation, inability to orgasm, and inability to get aroused because you just you're flooded.
So sensate focus, does that mean sensation? Like it's exercises on touching, spending time caressing? Is that
right?
The technique is along those lines?
Right. So sensate focus is a behavioral technique. It's behavioral exercises.
Okay.
Wherein a couple is given homework, because this does not happen inside the therapist's office. This is something the therapist kind of walks them through. Here's what I want you to do. And then you have to set aside time to go do it. And then you come back to the next session and you talk about how it went.
Okay.
And a lot of times here's a couple of things I just found that are the easiest way to kind of frame this, that there are several elements that are the foundation of Sensate Focus. It's mutual responsibility between partners for addressing sexual needs and concerns. And the mutual responsibility is a huge component of that.
Okay.
That it's both people being willing to do this. Mm-hmm. If one person is very reluctant or really hesitant or even kicking and screaming wanting to do it, you're not going to reap the same benefits. But if you're both interested in this, you've got a higher rate of return of good results. So then it's information and education about function and sexual activity. That's just the whole concept of how things are supposed to work.
Okay.
What should work? What's wrong? What could get in the way? Because one of the first steps you do also is medical checkups, just to make sure everything's working. Because mm-hmm. anytime you're dealing with sex therapy, you got to look medically as well.
Right.
A willingness to change and challenge your attitudes about sex. This is the big one: getting rid of sexual performance anxiety, because a lot of times we get into sex with an attachment to outcome, where there's a goal, it's performance driven. Mm-hmm. And Sensate Focus is largely removing that attachment to an outcome, because there's really not an outcome you're seeking other than the education of what you can learn by going through the process.
Which sounds like I'm reading something into this, so forgive me, Nicole, if I'm reading into it. But when she's talking about her husband kind of had trained his mind to stay away.
Right.
Right. And so it seems like there would be some anxiousness around that, and potentially, am I going to perform well if I'm feeling like I've had to stay away for so long,
right?
And now I kind of train my brain that way. It's not necessarily am I going to orgasm it, but on the whole, am I just going to perform well for you?
Right, and this is where Sensate Focus is. It's the mutual thing, because a lot of times Sensate Focus it's built on the foundation of you take turns.
Okay.
One person takes time to touch the other while the other is just focusing on that touch and the sensations that it provides, the feelings associated mm-hmm. with it. Mm-hmm. So this also, last 2 points, is it can help improve communication around sex and sexual techniques, which that's one of the best ways to do this.
Sure.
Is as you're practicing Sensate Focus, talk about what's going on.
Get feedback about how that touch feels.
I like that. I don't like that. That's really good. Harder, softer, lighter, whatever.
Right.
Right. So that's a great education for both of you. It can help reduce problem behaviors and roles. And then also the homework is where it really lies mm-hmm. as far as the importance. So a lot of times when you're talking about Sensate Focus, what it actually is you set aside time. Typically, you're talking 30 minutes to an hour, where you equally divide the time, where you start off on what helps you both relax and move into the situation. So oftentimes, a hot shower, a bath, mm-hmm. hot tub time, something that just kind of helps you calm down, mm-hmm. relax, walk into a good, warm, comfortable, inviting environment. Mm-hmm. Candles are lit, maybe some soft music's playing, and then it's a predetermined a lot of times. Sometimes it can be on the moment determine who goes first. And that's where they just get to lay and experience your touch. It's not a massage. It's a touch exercise.
Okay.
And a lot of times when you're first entering into this arena, genitalia is off limits. And we've talked about this before. Yeah. It's the following each other's touch without the genitalia being involved.
Right.
Where I love the idea of adding another layer to it, where you put your hand on your spouse's hand as they are initiating the touch to help your brain follow it. Same kind of concept, but it adds a little more of a connectedness. Mm-hmm. Sensate Focus in and of itself is largely they touch you while you focus in on your body and what's going on with you, not so much what your partner is or isn't doing.
Okay.
And that's where some of the theory and differentiation in the Schnarch training I've got contradicts this process.
Is that right?
Or doesn't, not necessarily contradicts it, but isn't as in favor of it. Because if you get to the true tenets of sensate focus, it largely is disconnected touch.
Because I'm sitting there just focusing on the sensation and how it affects me.
I'm just going into my own body to the exclusion of you.
Okay.
And vice versa. Okay. Because there's also power in the idea of how do I touch you and just focus on the experience of what's going on with me while I'm touching you.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing wrong with that. And that's my thinking's changed on some of this over the years, where I'm less against it because I can see a lot of value in the entry into, now we can start bringing in more connected touch and some of those exercises. Because if I can't even get in touch with my own body, as Nicole mentioned,
right,
then I'm missing a whole component of what marriage could be.
Well, and I think that's what so many, and I'm going to say women here, I think that's what so many women know, that I don't know what I want. I don't really know how I like
right
touch. And so it seems like that could be a good avenue to...
Yes, it can.
To figure that out.
But there's also an element of figuring this out with sensate focus. I can also do this solo.
Sure.
I can yep. practice and experiment with different ways to touch self. And it's not just sexually or masturbation, but there's an element of just how do I get in touch with who I am as a person? Mm. And then how do I deal with the anxiety that actually can happen when another person is involved in that?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we get off the rails, because you can get to where you're really experiencing your body well, but when someone else comes into the picture as their anxiety or their facial expressions or their word or their mm-hmm. pleasure, or I mean, because this is one of the things that we've seen in several of the emails over the years of Sexy Marriage Radio, that a husband's trying to last longer, but when he recognizes his wife is really into it, that's too much anxiety. It's too much to last any longer.
Yeah.
Because she's so turned on, it turns him on even all the more.
Yeah.
And which is a reality mm-hmm. of it. And so it's figuring out, this is a venture into it. And I give you credit for asking the question, Nicole, because this is one of those things that you absolutely venture into it. Try it out and then have conversations throughout and after on how did that go? Where were you? Where was I? Because then the whole goal to me is, how do I still steer this to where it's each of us being involved in our own lives and each other's mm-hmm. in those moments, so that I recognize not only how this all feels, but who I'm with too.
Right.
All right. So an email also came in the past couple of months, Pam, from a wife that just says, hello, I was wondering if you had an episode on toys in marriage, like the do's and the don'ts. If not, I have some questions. I recently bought a vibrator, or a dildo for lack of a better word, and my husband saw it and flipped out, like smashed it out with a hammer, cut it with a knife, and threw it away, flipped out. I hadn't even taken it out of the box and had had it for 3 weeks. He said it's the first stepping stone to cheating. I never have, nor will I ever cheat on him. His mom cheated on his dad, so there's a history there, but that's not me. We've played with other toys in the bedroom, like an anal plug or a bullet, so I don't understand this reaction. Like I said, it hadn't even been opened. I bought it for the times when I want it, but he's too tired. Thank you. P.S. We've been married 9 years, engaged for 2 before that, dated on and off through high school, so we've basically been together for 14 years.
Okay.
So on the subject of, do we have any episodes on toys? Yes, we've got 3 or 4 through the history in the archives, starting all the way back in episode 30 and 132. But the more pointed ones that are worth checking out would be episode 366, mm-hmm. which is the idea of toys, erotica, and fantasies.
Right.
And then the other one that I think is most applicable is episode 344, which is when sex toys feel like a threat. And that's one that is worth exploring, because this sounds like that can be an element of what's going on. Because if you're talking about a vibrator / dildo that is representative of the penis,
yeah,
there is this element in some men for sure that is threatening. Because if you use that, what do you need me for?
Sure.
Right? Because the other things that they've tried, those are a little more specific in what they do.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, I'm curious if she told him she was buying it or if he just stumbled upon it and that reaction didn't go well, right? If he didn't know it was there, that'd be like me stumbling upon a Playboy or something. I'm like, what the heck? Really? So sometimes how it's introduced, I'm sure the two of them know the details. But
so in essence, you're describing, Pam, that it's not necessarily the item itself. It's the discovery of it that was the issue, rather than had she brought that forward and said, hey, I'm going to do this because this is, sometimes you're tired and I'm interested and this is a means that I can experience a little more pleasure.
It's an assumption. I don't know. She didn't
I don't think
say,
you're off base with that.
But, you know, if I stumble across something and didn't know that you were even thinking about it, I might be thrown off and think, what the heck? Why wasn't this a part of our conversation?
Right. So recovering from that is harder.
Yeah, potentially so.
Yeah.
So
well,
maybe there's a thought process there that
there's definite truth to that. That having something disclosed to you, even when it hurts or is threatening or you're unsure, is far better than discovering something.
Yeah.
Because then you get into this, because that's where she's on to it, even to the degree of it's the stepping stone to cheating. And she's like, that's not us, but that's his history.
Right.
That's what he's been exposed to.
Yes. Kudos to her for recognizing, okay, there's something he experienced in his past.
Right.
And it's very hurtful. And
so this is an element
of cognizant.
I was kind of going behind his back in a way. Mm. And while she could see it as it's not a threatening thing, mm-hmm. I don't see anything wrong with it. There's nothing moral that I'm doing that's an affront mm-hmm. to him, mm-hmm. which is one of those differences of I can see something on a different scale than my spouse is going to. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily mean I have to come down to their way of doing it. That's what we're going to talk about in the extended show mm-hmm. of the moves that we make, trying to get more comfort in the stability of my relationship rather than recognizing I got to do it for myself too, on look at my role in this. So there is an element of how do you just recognize that if this is something you're interested in exploring, then bring it forward in the conversations to at least keep him involved in the conversation about here's my rationale, here's what I'm planning. And I'll even go so far as to let you know when it's used or you're willing to be a part. Or, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can still head down that road without forcing it, but at least be more open about this is what I'm looking for and this is why.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's worth how would you recommend if a couple comes into your office and that's his reaction, pounding it with a hammer and, I mean, totally demolishing this thing, mm-hmm. right? That's a statement as well. How do you
yeah,
respond
the
to
the first
that
question, thing? If they're both in front of me, is asking him, what's the meaning of that item to you?
Yeah.
What is that? Because it's likely not because it's a vibrator.
Right.
It's something else. It means something else. And that's what he's even alluded to it. It's a stepping stone to cheating.
Right.
That, in some regards, it's an overreaction. Because mm-hmm. if this goes into that myth we have that happens in marriage a lot, that if I'm not involved sexually, then my spouse is going to go find it elsewhere. Well, that's looking at your spouse in a pretty low regard. Mm-hmm. That they have no moral structure. They have no character. They have no integrity. Mm-hmm. That ultimately, yes, that could happen, but you could be the most sexually involved person in the world and a spouse could still go elsewhere.
Right.
So I cannot control another person, no matter how magical my genitalia may or may not be, does not mean they're going to stay involved with me. It's their personal choice. Right?
Right.
So it's being able to see it as what is the meaning underneath it. And she's already on to it.
She is.
That,
yeah.
Okay, there's a bigger picture that we're talking about here. So how do I at least acknowledge that dynamic, not have to live accordingly to it all the time, because that's tyranny of the lowest common denominator. But I got to at least acknowledge where they are
yeah.
and bring it forward and then make my next step. Mm-hmm. Because maybe it's not a toy that's more like the dildo and the phallicness of it. Maybe there's a toy that's like the bullet that can still get the same job done. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's some other things that provide the pleasure and the release that you're looking for when he's not interested that he's also on board with too. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a route that hasn't been explored just because you need to both come at it from a less reactive stance and a more, here's where I am. Here's what I'm looking for. What do you think? And then we see where we go next.
Yeah.
So transitioning into the extended content, for those that were not a part of the coaching Q&A call, which happens monthly mm-hmm. with Sexy Marriage Radio Academy, this is all stemming from a conversation that's been taking place in Slack. And so if you're in the Academy and not on Slack, come join us.
Yeah, check it out.
Just let us know. Send me an email. I'll make sure you get an invitation to join. And then you could be a part of the conversations as well. But this is about when one spouse replies to the other and their wants or desires as, I'm never enough. And we posed it to those that were on the call. And this is what followed. If you've been a part of the discussion in Slack, you've seen how this past week, week and a half, has lit up more conversation in a short time than we've had there in a long time, largely stemming from just desire differences, also building off of the episode from last week with Jennifer Finlayson Fife and the whole idea of the higher desire, lower desire dance and her framing of the lower desire, which then led to a conversation in Slack where one of the members made a comment about how he would enjoy learning more, experiencing more, reading blogs, listening to shows, but the response he would get from his wife would be, I'm never enough. And so that's a common occurrence that I come across and is framed or shaped in different ways. It's not always that succinct. But I was curious about having a live dialogue with those of you that are on the call with us tonight. Also with the caveat of taking maybe this segment out and using it for the extended content for this week's show, depending how the dialogue goes. But I'm curious when you guys hear as it's framed of when one spouse is met up against an inadequacy, an insecurity, a uncertainty, a fear, something that's typically interpreted as negative, and they respond with, it's never enough, or I'm never enough. What's the best ways as a relationship that you see it? How do you address that? And then Pam and I'll answer as well. But I wanted to kick off the conversation for anybody that's willing to jump in with this topic.
Well, I guess I feel, I guess kind of, pity isn't the word I'm looking for, but like I used to feel that way a lot, and it hurts. It's a hard place to be, but like, it's not a great place to stay for very long. Cause it doesn't really, your life doesn't go well when that's your whole attitude. So I don't know how to have, sympathy. That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay.
Like, I don't know how you'd have sympathy, but encourage them to move out of it, because then that would just sound like, so I'm not enough. That's why you want me to change. But I don't know. I can't imagine how unhealthy it would be to be there your whole life. I mean, I guess I was there for a really long time. It just really wasn't good. And it just colored the whole way the way I saw the whole world. Like,
sure,
I'm not enough and the whole world looks bad. I don't know.
Well, and I think it's fair to say that this concept comes up most when you're talking, it's topic specific, because you're going to have areas that you bring forward in a relationship that you feel really strong about, that you do well, that you provide, that you offer, that's a definite positive. But whenever we're met by our spouse in an area that we feel weaker or less secure about, a common response of this being, it's never enough, or I'm never enough, is
the whole trying to stop the progress. To it's a way to get the person that's pursuing the growth or the movement or the evolving to back off. And a lot of times it works. That it's a good move if you think of it systemically, although it holds both parties hostage in some regards.
It's a good move to get them to back off.
It's a good move to stop the progress of the relationship. It stagnates things, which is what Becky's talking about, that it can make it to where it's a real difficult place to then live. And it's not just difficult for the person who doesn't feel like they're enough. It's then difficult for their partner, for the spouse, because they're then feeling like they're held hostage.
Could it be that, like, he is not saying enough good things? Like, is it only ever complaining, or is it like, you know, I really love it when you do this, I love it when you do that, and I'd like to try this instead? Like, if it's only ever, I want you to change these things, then like that would be kind of a fair complaint, right? Like, I'm never enough. Like, you're never saying what I'm doing right. I only hear what I need to change. But if he's, you know, saying a lot of really good things, and
well, that's a possible way, I think, that we could get through a little bit of it. But just because you get some propping up or some compliments on some of the other things, it's still, you're still having to face this gridlock issue. Typically, you're talking about this surrounding sex or eroticism or novelty within it or variety or frequency. If you just kind of take the nuances within that topic, there's still that element of, even if you're complimented as, hey, you're so great as a partner and a parent with me and a coworker or whatever roles we play, but being able to, you know, hear that doesn't necessarily take away the pressure of, yeah, but I still don't want to do what you're asking me to do, or I still feel threatened by where you're wanting to go with this. Because I think the never enough, the premise of it is, I can't meet that need. And my belief professionally is, right, you can't. I don't think humans are ever enough for another human. If you think about it on a global sense, we all have to come to grips with where we end and how someone else will not fill that for us. In my mind, I think that's if you have a spiritual Christian worldview, that's part of the fall. That's part of the separation of us as the human species from God. And even before the fall, I still put the premise of, we were meant to find our identity through the Trinity, through God, Father, and the Holy Spirit. When the fall happened, that severed that even more. And now we seek to try to get even more validation from other people, when in reality, no one could ever fully validate us.
Mm-hmm.
How do you hear that, Pam?
Well, my initial thought is a lot of people are going to be disappointed.
Okay.
A lot of people are going to be disappointed because they think that either they can be there and fulfill that, or somebody else is going to jump in and satisfy whatever it is they're aching for.
Okay.
Right.
And I think someone was just getting ready to start speaking up right when.
You know, if I can jump in here a minute, I guess just picking up on where you're going, Corey, you know, this makes me think of, you know, it's the Disneyfication of relationships.
Yes.
And maybe Disney, you know, is a little tough to pick on this one, but
Hallmark will work. Hollywoodization would work.
You know, this fiction, that we're generally fed, and I guess my take on it when I posted about this was, you know, just taking it on from my perspective, even, you know, there's lots of times when I have not felt good enough, you know, in the areas that I feel I'm responsible for, or the things that are being requested of me. I think this is, I'm not enough is an equal opportunity complaint.
Yep.
I know that in the context of the, of what was going on in Slack, I know that it was more male to female sided in terms of where it originally came from. But I think it's important for us just kind of all get our heads around what does that really mean, and where did this standard of enough come from? And then coming back to you with the whole idea of when you dig right down to it, none of us can be enough. Like, to expect that, you know, my wife can be absolutely everything to me is a weight that just isn't fair to place on her.
Right. It's destined to fail at some point, because another human can't prop up another human that long.
And I think maybe just going back to the media and maybe how this can maybe hit the female side of it harder is the romantic notion and the romantic movies that play on this sentiment and build this fiction to a place that when they're feeling like this message is coming from my guy that somehow I'm not enough, it just kind of crushes this fiction that's been created, you know, since potential girls been watching TV since they were five or something. I might be out of line there, but that kind of idea.
Well, sure. Yeah. Cause I think this is on both sides. It's not, it puts both parties in the system in a dilemma, because if the person, if spouse A, who is saying, is using the I'm not enough card, gets their way, then spouse B gives up on what they're pushing. And that's typically then replaced with levels of resentment, which in my mind as human beings, when we have resentment with someone we live in close proximity to, we cannot hide that resentment. It will come out. It will have different things that will wreak havoc on you and will be picked up on your partner, which then further exacerbates this I'm never enough. And there's your cycle. There's your dynamic that just gets even compounded. So I love the framework of looking at it from the lens of this is just a critical mass moment of the system, that when spouse A, for whatever the topic is, and this is where we got to keep it topic specific, because if you make it global, then you start getting into what, Becky, you were describing of it's a miserable way to live, because you start looking at everything of your self-worth and value and that one thing, and that's not an accurate picture. That math doesn't add up. So it's being able to see it as when they say, I'm never enough, or I'm not enough for you in this, it's being able to, in essence, both of you create room for dual existences of spouse A and spouse B. That it's the moving forward of the system, and that's generally led by one party taking a step and a leap of faith to push the system into that really uncomfortable state and see if the spouse is willing to confront themselves in that arena. Because what I remember the conversation was, some of the different blogs or podcasts that were listened to that were met by wife as threatening or frustrating. So they were given up with levels of resentment. So one of the ways would be, you don't necessarily give up your path. You might alter your path slightly, but you don't give it up completely. And that's a cleaner way to still keep the pressure on and keep a dialogue going about the pressure, because that's the only way through it. You can't go around it. That's the move of I'm not enough is a way to eliminate the pressure for the time. That's why it's a good move.
Gotcha.
To try to stabilize a system briefly, but it doesn't deal with the issue.
Oh, sorry. Can I say a comment?
Please do.
I think this whole thing, I mean, it ultimately all goes to each individual spouse's relationship with Jesus. Because if they're looking to their spouse for fulfillment, I mean, that's not biblical and it's never going to work, because that's not how the marriage dynamic is supposed to work in the first place. So I think if anything, the spouse who is feeling like they're not enough, their spouse should be encouraging them spiritually and encouraging them with their own spiritual development. Because that's probably the root cause of the way they're feeling, that, oh, I'm not enough for you because of whatever
situation is coming up in their marriage.
Sure. I think that's a good launching point that you can examine, but I think you also have to make it a little more global and even almost humanistic, if you will. I don't really like that terminology, but it'll fit, I think, with this is a worth and value statement. And so how do I still treat a spouse who feels like in that area they're not enough? How do I still treat them with value and worth and respect?
Well, but coming from our perspective, I 100% agree sure. with her, right? Because no matter what area of life we're in, if I'm looking for my worth and respect out of someone, anything other than from the spiritual realm, and my focus in this core circle that I can only rely on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm destined for failure.
True.
From my belief structure,
I get it.
Right?
I get it.
I'm totally there with her.
I get it.
I'm throwing your thought process off.
No, I'm just trying to think of, I just want to be careful with our conversation, because one of the things that I value with Sexy Marriage Radio and then the Academy is I want the conversation to always lean towards what's some practical, tangible things, not the, well, you just need to grow up. That's a platitude.
Right. Well, you don't think that the spouse helping their other spouse strengthen their spiritual life and their relationship with Jesus would help?
No, I absolutely think it would. I don't want to diminish that at all. But I also want to steer it a little bit towards the realm of
more tangible.
You could have two incredibly devout, spiritual, active believers of Jesus Christ and doing a lot of kingdom work, but one of them still has a lower desire for sex than the partner who has a higher desire for sex. That just because you both love Jesus doesn't make the desires become closer.
I see.
There's still some tangible things that play out in human terms that we don't have sex with spirit life. And that's where I want to make sure we kind of are still steering towards that too.
Well, I think, Corey, what you said earlier about how, and I guess I hadn't thought about it this way before, but you know, I'm not enough is a power play. And yes. It's a power play that ends up shutting the other person down because, I mean, who's going to keep the conversation after your partner said, well, I'm not enough. I mean,
right. Even the bringing up what you're wanting is a power play. And that's the whole dynamic I want to at least get out in the open. Pursuing what I'm interested in is a move of power too. So it's on both sides that this thing goes on. And that's where the weight lies on both sides. So that's where it becomes. And I think, Tom, your framework and phraseology was really good in the Academy on that. It is talking about our own development as people and recognizing I'm not always going to be enough. And that's just going to be the reality of it. But how do I bring my level of enoughness, whatever that is in that moment, as I deem it, how do I bring that forward and let that process unfold a little better while still treating myself and my partner with the utmost respect.
Yeah, and it's funny you say it's a power play. I guess I wouldn't have thought about that either. I guess the ask or the movement, the pursuit on something is a power, and the I'm not enough is the power response.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a dynamic that goes on in marriages, and it's something worth recognizing that whenever we're met with something we're not interested in or uncertain about, we often don't react real well as human beings. That's a fair statement, right, Pam?
Right.
so, and I'll own it. I don't. I can totally pout, passive aggressive, avoid all these kinds of things when Pam's got something she's wanting to head towards and I'm not interested. I can do the same kind of move. And so it's just recognizing that's the dynamic of critical mass in some regards playing out in real time of one person pushing a relationship towards, I want to evolve this thing because I'm evolving me too, along with it. It's not always, you know, that's the whole concept of when you introduce something unilaterally in a relationship, it's likely your spouse isn't going to stand up and applaud.
Right.
It just seems to me that somehow these two things are not, they're not the same power play, I guess, or I'm just uncomfortable in the moment here of thinking that the request is the same as I'm not enough as being equal power plays.
Well, and maybe equality is not a good framework, but I think it's recognizing that it's pressures on the relationship on both sides. It's one of you trying to push for something while the other is probably okay with the status quo.
So do you think it would be helpful? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Do you think it'd be helpful to just ask a question like, what is enough? Like, what does enough look like? And like, maybe it's just unrealistic. Like, maybe it's, you know, me being good enough is being some sex goddess. Well, like, maybe you just aren't, like, you know, or maybe he's thinking good enough is just, you know, like very attainable, and she's
already doing that. I would tend to think that a lot of times that level of enoughness is part of our problem is it's ill-defined. We don't even know what it actually would be in some regards.
You wrote it down, like, would that help?
It's our perception of what our spouse thinks it is, right? And that's where you don't feel like necessarily you can attain it because you think there's this expectation of you. And I guess that's the way I'm seeing it defined in here. It's we've not maybe come out and said what enough is, but I just know whatever it is, I'm not meeting whatever your expectation is.
Okay.
That's how I'm seeing it. I don't know if anybody else sees it a different way.
Okay. Joe, I want you to jump in. You were getting ready to say something.
I totally agree with this discussion. That's exactly where we're at. And I think we, you know, you're talking about the power play, and I think there is two different powers. It's not necessarily one's equal or you know.
Yeah, neither one is more virtuous than the other. Let's keep that just very clean.
Yeah, exactly. For us, like I say, I guess what I'm interested in most is, and we both had this, I'm not enough, in different aspects of our relationship.
Yep.
Definitely. And over the last several years, I've been working on my stuff a lot to where I'm probably better suited now to deal with than I ever would have been at any point in time in the past.
Right.
So now I'm kind of to that point where I'm like, okay, what do I do when she says that I'm not enough of, you know, what's the practical of that? Because if I get defensive, that's not taken well.
Right.
If I push too much, it's not taken well. And I think Pam made a good comment there too, that sometimes that's not even well defined.
Right.
You know, and I think her mind almost gets running away with her of these wild, horrible things that are in my mind. I'm like, no, that's not even where I'm going with this,
right.
You know? And I think this fear takes over and just kind of like, I don't even want to open my mind to could be, and it gets that shutdown.
Right.
What would be a good, solid, healthy, non-threatening where I can still maintain my integrity and not go into those weird places of just shutting down or checking out.
Okay, so let me stop you real quick, Joe, because you're adding a lot of caveat to the question of how do I do this so it's non-threatening? Well, non-threatening according to who? Because the I'm not enough is largely because I feel threatened.
Good point.
Right? So I think you're better off with the way you frame it of, what's my move that's still in line with my integrity and my character? Because that's what this whole thing is about.
Gotcha.
That I'm able to air what it is, what I'm interested in, what I think, what's going on, what I'm pursuing, whatever. And I can separate that from, do I get it? Do I require you to be here with me to be able for us to get it? or do I share a fantasy or an idea or a dream? And it's nebulous in the sense that it's not about trying to actually make it come to fruition. It's about putting it out there as far as being intimate with each other. It's that concept of, I came across this just this week and kind of walking through all of this stuff as I was watching all the conversations go on and also preparing for this week's show. The whole idea of we pursue things under the umbrella of we want more intimacy, but I don't know if we really do want more intimacy because it's really scary when we get it. And so there's things that I don't want to know about Pam, but I want to know about Pam because some of the things that I might know, I may not agree with, or I may not like, or they might be, you know, into an insecurity of me. And so I think the move, Joe, is how do you, is you err, and some of this is with tact and it's with wisdom and discernment based on what you know of the relationship with your wife and where you are and where she is. But it's a willingness to kind of take that half step of being able to say, hey, I came across this today. And your history tells you already it's probably not going to be received real well. But when it's not received well, you don't get defensive or justify. You just kind of give it room of, well, yeah, I just wanted to share it with you. I'm not pushing an agenda. And as you go longer, I think then you start to see the pressures of the relationship are better because you're operating more from your own integrity. You like you better, which means then you can like other people better.
Yeah, that makes sense. Totally.
Any other last thoughts before we kind of, I'm going to transition to any other questions that are on you guys' minds for tonight.
Would it work to say like, you are good enough? Would that be untruthful or would that be helpful?
Well, does saying you are good enough really, is that a true statement? Are they enough if you're asking for something more?
I think so. I mean, sometimes for me, I mean, like I love my husband, but I mean, like we could always improve. We can always get better. So I want to keep getting better, even though our marriage is good.
I think it really helps to, because I think what I hear you, Becky, is like the acknowledgement of, you know, making that positive statement, but to make that positive statement in a way that gets really specific. I love this thing. It has nothing to do with being enough or not enough. It's just, I love this thing, whatever it is.
Right. Right. Yeah. Because I think ultimately to me, what, and maybe I'm going to speak for you guys and you tell me if I'm off base. But ultimately for me, I think if we're aspiring for a greatness in marriage, one of the ways to define that is I'm getting the opportunity to taste the essence of my spouse. It's not as I deem it. It's also as they deem it. It's who they are. It's what makes them wonderfully and uniquely who they are. And their strengths, their weaknesses, all of it that I get to experience that. So it's not this, Tom, like you mentioned it earlier, it's not this Hollywoodization or Disneyfication of an ideal. It's I'm recognizing who I am with and I get to experience that because Becky, as you're framing it, they're growing alongside with me in this too. That we each are doing that process.
That's kind of the opposite Hollywoodization, right? When you see a husband and wife in the end days and they're cherishing all the little secrets of the things that the spouse did poorly, but they love it because that's what the two of them shared together.
Right.
Right. Nobody else knew this secret about
him,
right, or that he hated about himself or that she didn't like about herself, but I knew it.
Right.
And that was just between the two of us.
That's what makes the relationship more sacred.
More sacred. And that's always is a perspective, right? Mm-hmm. If I look at it as a positive way, and that's another way of us being intimate because just the two of us know that, that's one thing. But I could look at it
in an opposite way and say, God, I know all these ridiculous things about them.
Right. Thank you, guys. Well done.
Pam.
Well, it's been a while since, like, you and I have done a full show.
It has been.
It seems.
It has been. We've had a lot of guests. And
well, it's the end of second busy tax busy
of,
season.
End of tax season. I appreciate you being flexible with me.
So it's fun to have you back on the air, babe.
Yeah, it's really nice to be here. It really is.
I've missed doing this with you. Yeah. Well, this has been Sexy Marriage Radio. If there's something that we left undone or you didn't like the way we took it, we want to know.
Let us know.
Because I hope over the years of Sexy Marriage Radio, we've at least proven we will handle and want the pushback. There's a lot that we can learn from each other. Mm-hmm. So Sexy Marriage Radio plays a huge role in that. So thank you very much for showing up each and every week to spend it with us. So wherever you are, whatever you've been doing, I hope that this week is a fabulous one for you. See you next time.